My name is Dr. Gary Collins. I'm a psychologist and a professor of counseling at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. This is a tape about anxiety. It is not meant to replace your counselor, to answer all of your questions, or to solve your problems for you. It is intended instead as a supplement to counseling, an added plus which your counselor would like you to hear and discuss during some later counseling session. We know that tapes like this can be helpful, so let's spend some time talking together about the problem of anxiety. Anxiety, as you are probably aware, is very common in our society. It has been called the most urgent problem of our day, and although anxiety has been around for many years, and probably is as old as human existence, it is possible that the complexities and difficulties of modern life have made people feel more anxious in our age than at any other time in all of history. If you feel anxious, I suppose I could tell you to join the crowd. There are many people who feel the same way. In fact, all of us feel anxious at times, and this isn't always a very pleasant kind of feeling to experience. As we begin this tape, however, I think we should point out that anxiety isn't always bad. In fact, sometimes it can be very good. It can motivate us. It can spur us on to do the things that we might not do otherwise. When I was a student, I was not very motivated to study until a professor announced that there was a test coming. As soon as I knew that there was an examination on the way, there was a little bit of anxiety there to spur me on, to get me moving. And in this respect, anxiety can be good. But that's not the kind of anxiety that most of us are concerned about. Most of us are bothered by the anxiety that gets in the way of our everyday activities. The anxiety that cuts our attention span short, that makes it difficult to concentrate and sometimes to remember, that prevents us from really relaxing and getting through with our activities of the day. This kind of anxiety sometimes brings panic, and that can lead to physical symptoms and intense discomfort. At the beginning, we should recognize that anxiety is a very complex problem. Probably every person who listens to this tape will experience anxiety in a little different way. It may be that the causes of anxiety in your life are different from the causes of anxiety in the lives of other people. It is also true, probably, that the way you react to anxiety will be at least a little bit unique. Some people, for example, get easily flustered. They can't think clearly, their memory gets fuzzy, and sometimes they do things that are very inefficient. There are other people, however, who outwardly remain cool, calm, and collected, while inside their body is churning up. And then, when they least expect it, they get an ulcer, or tension headaches, or some other physical symptom which indicates that the body is really crying, ouch. Since this anxiety so often affects us physically, let me suggest that if you are a person who seems to have a lot of anxiety, it would be helpful for you to get a good physical examination before you try to deal with anxiety in other ways. Maybe something physical is at the basis of your anxiety. But that, of course, is not the kind of a decision that any of us can make unless we're physicians. I'm sure you don't want to run out and get a physical examination before you finish the rest of this tape. But if your anxiety is persistent, and if there are physical problems which seem to be bothering you, please don't assume that this is all psychologically caused. Make up your mind to get a good physical examination as soon as you can get an appointment. Now let's turn to some other issues. Does it seem strange to you that you are listening to this discussion on a tape talking about anxiety? Well, strangely enough, there is evidence to show that listening to a tape can often help you to deal with your anxieties. The tape can help you relax and to deal with anxieties, especially if the tape is used in conjunction with a counselor. This tape can get you thinking about your own anxieties, perhaps in some new ways. And your counselor can help you explore some of the concerns that might be causing the anxiety. Hopefully, this tape and your counselor can also help you to more effectively deal with the anxieties in your life. And so, on the remainder of the first side of this tape, I'd like to summarize some of the causes of anxiety, and then talk about some of the ways in which we can each cope with our own anxiety. Let's begin with some causes of anxiety. It's important for us to consider these, because if you know the causes, then maybe you can spot some of the causes of anxiety in your own life. Researchers and other creative people have suggested many causes of anxiety, and we don't have time here to go through their long lists. But let me mention just four or five very common causes. And as I go through this list, ask yourself this question. Does this create anxiety in my life? And remember that in a few minutes we're going to talk about how to cope with anxiety. That's important to remember. I don't want you to listen to this list of causes and just get more and more anxious because you've forgotten about the fact that we're going to get to some solutions. So let's look at the first cause. The first cause of anxiety that I would like to mention is threat. We all feel threatened at times, don't we? We feel threatened when we're in the midst of danger, when there's an unexpected illness or a violent storm, sometimes when we're in a new social situation, or when we're visiting the doctor or dentist. We may feel threatened and hence anxious when we're not sure about whether we're going to be hurt physically. Then there's the kind of threat that occurs when we're facing a situation which might hurt us psychologically. What if we are going to apply for a job but are afraid that we might get turned down? What if we give a speech and forget our lines? What if we take a test and fail? Nobody likes to have these things happen, so very often we go through life feeling threatened, afraid that we might be hurt, rejected, or a failure. I suspect you've had these feelings because they're very, very common. Whenever we meet new people or encounter a situation which is new or unknown, we often feel uncertain and threatened. As a result, we experience anxiety. A second cause of anxiety is conflict. Sometimes the conflict is over a decision that we have to make. We feel anxious as we struggle with the difficulty of deciding what we should do. At other times, the conflict is between people. Maybe two people are having an argument, and this makes you feel uncomfortable and anxious. Or perhaps somebody is having an argument or disagreement with you, and you feel uncomfortable about that, because you don't like tension and are not really sure how you should handle the situation. These kinds of conflicts often make us feel anxious, especially because we are uncertain of what might happen and of what we ought to do. A third cause of anxiety is fear. A lot of people would suggest that anxiety and fear are really the same thing. But usually fear refers to something very specific. When we are afraid, we can identify what is bothering us. There is, for example, the fear of failure. What if we try something new and don't succeed? That's pretty difficult in our society when being successful is very important. Other people have a fear of isolation. They ask themselves, what if people leave me? Some say, what if people criticize me? What if they don't like me? What if they leave me alone? What if they think I'm boring? Closely connected with this is the fear of insignificance. What if I don't count in this life, we might ask? What if my boss doesn't notice me? What if my kids don't really pay attention to me? What if my teachers think I'm a blah person and perhaps worse? What if my friends don't think I really amount to anything? In addition, many people have a fear of change. Things are moving so quickly in this world in which we live it is difficult to keep up. And the fear that the world will pass us by creates anxiety in some people. Within recent years, there has even been research into something called the fear of success. What if I succeed and everybody knows I'm a success and therefore expects me to deliver? This can create a great deal of anxiety. I might not be able to live up to everybody else's expectations. And so a third cause of anxiety is fear. Then there's a fourth cause of anxiety. It's that which comes from our separation from other people. Most of us want to be close to other people. We want to be liked, and we need to be needed. And when we're not needed, not wanted, and not liked, living in this world can be a very difficult and anxiety-producing experience. Well, these are four causes of anxiety: threat, conflict, fear, and separation from others. I suppose we could keep going. We could talk about the anxieties that come when we're in a new and difficult situation, like driving a car on the freeways of some city where we don't live, like meeting somebody whom we don't know but would like to impress, or like trying to succeed in a job when we're not completely sure of ourselves. Each of these can create anxiety. They come because of our encountering difficult situations in the world in which we live. It is probable, however, that these situations in themselves don't create anxiety. Part of the cause of anxiety comes from within. Have you ever noticed that sometimes you feel anxious when everybody around seems to be so calm and relaxed? Now, of course, these people may not be calm and relaxed inside, but sometimes the things that make you anxious might not be making other people anxious at all. The circumstances in which we live bring about anxiety, but how we respond to these circumstances to a large extent depends on what's going on inside of us. How do you see the situation? How do you interpret it? How do you feel about your ability to cope with it? Let's take a simple example. Suppose you have a little child who runs out into a busy street. The danger is there in the form of cars and trucks that are driving up and down the road, but the child sees no danger at all, and hence he or she doesn't feel any anxiety. This child is not aware of the danger, but you are very much aware of the danger, and you interpret the circumstances in a way that creates anxiety in you. Much of the anxiety that we experience, therefore, depends on how we see and interpret the world around us. Now, while there are many dangerous situations in this world, situations which bring about threat and conflict and fear and separation, some of the situations which arouse anxiety are not really as bad as we think. Some of the things that make us anxious don't really need to make us anxious. Sometimes we even know this intellectually, but it still doesn't take away the anxiety. And that's what I'd like to talk about now, how we can take away some of the anxiety. How can we cope with anxiety in a way which will help us to recognize the realistic dangers in this world, but to get along in a less anxious way of life? Some of the suggestions which I'm going to make on the remainder of this tape are taken from a little book entitled Relax and Live Longer. You can get a copy by sending $1.25 to Vision House Publishers, 1507 East McFadden, Santa Ana, California, 92705. The first suggestion for coping with anxiety is to ask yourself this question: do I really want to be less anxious? Now, I suspect your first reaction is going to be, yes, of course I do. If I didn't want to be less anxious, I wouldn't be listening to this tape. But there seem to be some people who like to run around in anxious situations. They're bored when they relax. Sometimes they feel guilty if they try to slow down and deal more realistically with the anxiety-producing problems in life. These are the people who seem to think that if you can be busy, busy, busy all the time, then you're being useful, and you're doing what God wants you to do. But you will remember that even Jesus took time away from his disciples and from the crowds. This was so he could relax, and I'm sure it helped him to deal with the anxieties that might otherwise have come into his busy life. To follow his example and to slow down might be threatening. If you take the time to look at yourself, at your family, at your own inadequacies, or at some of your failures, this could be threatening. You might find it a lot easier to run around in hectic, anxious activity rather than to slow down. But let me point out something which I'm sure you know already. Eventually, anxiety begins to take its toll, psychologically, physically, spiritually, and socially, in our relationships with other people. If we can learn to relax, our lives are likely to be more pleasant. We are likely to be more efficient in our work. We're going to feel better physically. And I believe it's going to help us in our spiritual lives so that we can grow more in our relationship with Jesus Christ. As a result, we will be a lot more effective in the work that He might have us to do. So I'd like to return to that question. Do you really want to cut down on your anxieties and be less anxious? If not, I would suggest that you discuss this fully with your counselor. If you do want to be less anxious, then we can move on to some other suggestions on this tape. The second suggestion concerns your physical state. If you want to cut down on your anxiety, might I suggest that you look at your exercise, at your diet, and at your resting patterns? Do you get enough exercise? We have been called a lazy society with so many labor-saving devices that we hardly exert ourselves at all. Others of us get so busy with our work that we don't take time to exercise our bodies. Jogging and swimming and bicycling and taking brisk long walks might all be time-consuming, but they can help us physically, as of course can more strenuous sports such as handball or squash or tennis. But remember your age and your lifestyle, and don't overdo it. If you're not getting proper exercise, this may be contributing to your anxiety. Your body is not in good enough shape to handle some of the pressures of life, and so the tensions build up. The same is true with diet. There are a host of books on the market about losing weight, and eating properly. I would suggest that you be careful about going on crash diets, especially if those promise to take off pounds quickly. Your doctor or an expert in nutrition can help you decide what is best for you to eat. But even we lay people know that there are some things that we eat in abundance that we should not eat. Perhaps it's time that we take a re-evaluation of our eating habits. Then let me suggest that you make it a practice to get proper rest. When we're not getting rest, we can't think clearly. We can't remember as well. We're not as effective in our work. We tend to be impatient with people. And all of this increases the likeliness of our having difficulty in dealing with the problem of anxiety. Now, after looking at your exercise, diet, and sleep patterns, let me suggest that you give some thought to the world around you. What I'm going to say may seem very strange at first, but if you think about it, perhaps it will make some sense. The place where we live and where we do our work has a great influence on how we handle anxiety. If you live in a noisy room, if you play loud, highly stimulating music in the background, if you work in a cluttered place with a lot of confusing wallpaper, all of this can increase your potential for being anxious. These things in themselves don't bring about the anxiety, but very often they can make it more and more difficult for you to handle the anxieties that come your way. So I would suggest that you take a look around you. Try to make your environment more peaceful. That's a third suggestion for dealing with anxiety. In our house, we have discovered that when we have loud music in the background, especially if it's music that has a very strong beat, our dinner conversation isn't nearly as relaxed as it would be otherwise. Now, I'm not against music which has a strong beat, or even music which might be noisy, but I suggest that you not play that when you're struggling with a lot of anxieties. A fourth way in which we can deal with anxiety is to develop friendships. Having friends with whom we can communicate honestly is one of the greatest defenses against the anxieties of life. In this country, we like to do things on our own. But regretfully, that doesn't always work. We've got to learn that if we're really going to deal with the tensions of life and handle our anxieties, it helps if we can talk to somebody else who is concerned about us and willing to help. Now, of course, building friendships takes time. It also takes effort, a willingness to listen, a willingness to share our own struggles, and a willingness to be vulnerable so that other people might get to know us. Perhaps you have heard the old saying that he or she who would have friends must be friendly. Well, I think we can learn to be friendly. You can reach out to other people in friendly gestures, and very often we discover that those same people are a source of strength and encouragement to us, especially in times when we're anxiety-prone. Very often, these people can also help us when we're struggling to work through conflicts. They can help us to find answers to our problems and to deal with some of our fears. That's really what the whole body of Christ is all about. Sometimes I think we forget to care for one another in our own churches. But again and again in the Bible, it tells us to be concerned about each other. And if we can grow in this closeness, we're going to be more effective in dealing with the pressures of life. Now, in all of this, I hope you won't overlook the value of music, which can be very relaxing, especially when we're in tense situations. I hope that you'll recognize the value of humor. I'm not suggesting, of course, that you laugh away your problems, but sometimes if we can learn to look at the humorous side, well, then these same situations don't really seem as bad as they might be otherwise. I think we should also recognize that there will be situations which we cannot change or correct. Many years ago, a theologian wrote a prayer which has been used for years by Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure you've heard it. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I would also suggest that you take note of what the Scriptures have to say about anxiety. I suppose the best-known statement is found in the 4th chapter of Philippians. The Apostle Paul is writing, and he tells his readers to stop worrying and to not be anxious over anything. Now, I don't know how you react to that, but sometimes I think it's difficult just to stop worrying. Sometimes, if we deliberately try to stop being anxious, we're focusing our attention on the very problem that is producing the anxiety, and the more we try to stop, the more anxious we get. Well, perhaps the Apostle Paul realized that, because he then gave some guidelines on how we can stop being anxious. He says, first, rejoice in the Lord. That's repeated a couple of times, so it must be important. I think we must always recognize in times of anxiety that we serve a Lord who is concerned about us, and that we need to look at His greatness even in the midst of anxiety. Rejoicing, that is, being grateful for who He is and what He's doing, can be helpful. Then it tells us in Philippians chapter 4 that we should let our forbearing spirit be known to all men. Now, what does that mean? Well, the word forbearing has no real equivalent in English. It means letting everybody see your kind, sweet, generous, considerate, gracious attitude. Now, you and I know that these qualities don't come easily, and they don't come naturally. But I believe that we can ask God to help us to be gracious to other people. And somehow, when we're gracious, this works against our being anxious. And that becomes an important way to deal with the anxieties of life. Then the Scriptures tell us that we should pray. I believe that we can pray about anything, even about the small details of our lives, knowing that God in His goodness will hear and answer our prayers. A major cure for anxiety certainly is prayer. And the Scriptures tell us, too, that we should be careful about what we think. One of the reasons why we get anxious, I suggest, is because we're thinking about what is bad and what is going to be a problem. But the Bible tells us to put our attention on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and good and excellent and worthy of praise. There are some people who will suggest that one way to deal with anxiety is to put your mind into neutral, or to think about some magic word that you repeat over and over again. But the Bible doesn't tell us to do this. It tells us to meditate on the things that are good, and it tells us to meditate on the Word of God. In times of anxiety, this can be an effective way to deal with the pressures of life. But the Bible doesn't suggest that we just sit around meditating. It says in addition that we should do some action. Paul wrote, "The things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, put these things into constant practice." The Christian is to do what the Bible commands. Anxiety reduction involves godly behavior. Ask God to show you what He wants you to do, even in the midst of anxiety, and try to do it. And when you do so, you're making real progress towards the solution of this difficult problem. This is the end of Side 1 of the Tape on Anxiety. On your guide sheet, there are some questions for you to answer. Please complete these questions before turning over the tape and listening to Side 2. On Side 1 of this tape, we talked about anxiety. We noted how common it was, and how it influences each of us differently. We discussed some of the causes of anxiety, and pointed out how that threat, conflict, fear, and separation can create anxiety in each of our lives. We spent time talking about some ways in which we can deal with anxiety, and suggested that the place to start is with you asking yourself, "Do you really want to deal with the anxiety?" We mentioned exercise, sleep, and diet, spent some time talking about changing the environment in which we live, and then we wound up the first side of the tape by considering our spiritual resources, some things that the Bible has to say about anxiety. Now, on this side of the tape, we're going to take a different approach. We will focus only on 3 suggestions on this side of the tape. Perhaps you will want to jot down some things which might be helpful to you as you look to the anxieties in your own life. The first suggestion that you might consider for dealing with anxiety is to take stock of your present situation. What is it right now that is making you feel anxious? To help you decide, please take a piece of paper and draw 2 lines down the paper so that you're making 3 columns. At the top of column 1, write this: "The things that make me feel anxious." At the top of column 2, write, "Thoughts that make me feel anxious. Then at the top of column 3, write, what I can do about feeling anxious. Now let's begin by turning our attention to column 1, the things that make you feel anxious. I would like you to take a few minutes and jot down the things in your life that make you feel anxious. You might have a short list or a long list. It could include events, people, situations, or other influences that make you feel anxious. Please turn off the tape long enough for you to make this list. Now that you've completed the first column, let's look at the top of column 2, the thoughts that make you feel anxious. On side 1 of this tape, we mentioned that many of our anxieties come because of the way we look at the world around us or think about the situations which we encountered every day. The anxiety comes not because of the situations themselves, but because of what we think about these situations. Suppose, for example, that in column 1, you indicated that it's very uncomfortable and anxiety-producing for you to meet new people. Now ask yourself, what goes through my mind when I meet a new person? What kinds of thoughts do I have? Maybe you think, that person isn't going to like me. They'll be critical of the way I'm dressed. I might not handle myself appropriately. Perhaps I'll make a fool of myself. Now, the anxiety in meeting a stranger does not come so much from the new person. The anxiety is coming from what you fear inside of you. Now, I suspect that most anxiety comes because of what goes on in our own thinking. So look at those things listed in column 1. Can you think of some thoughts that go through your mind when you get into a difficult, anxious situation? These are the thoughts that are creating the anxiety in you. Why don't you take the time now to write on your paper again? This time, take the anxieties listed in column 1. Then, one at a time, write what you think in the second column. What do you think about this situation that is making you feel anxious? What anxiety-producing thoughts go through your mind when you encounter each of the situations listed in the first column? If you need more space, jot things down on the back of your paper. Please take a few minutes to do this now and complete column 2. Turn off the tape before you continue. By now you should have guessed, I suspect, that one of the ways in which we can deal with anxiety is to change our thinking about anxious situations. Let's go back once again to the example of meeting someone you don't know. Suppose you're anxious because you're afraid that this person won't like you. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have any good reason for thinking that he or she won't like you? And what if it turns out that this person really doesn't like you? Is that the end of the world? Can you think of anything in life worse than a stranger not liking you? You see, many of the things that we think about in life create anxiety, but often there's no evidence for our conclusions at all. This gets us to column 3. What are you going to do about your feelings of being anxious? One of the things you can do is to ask yourself if the thoughts that are outlined in column 2 really make sense. Is there any good reason for them? If not, what can you do to change your thinking so that you think more realistically and in accordance with the facts as you know them? Based on your past experience, if people have liked you in the past, there's a pretty good chance they'll like you in the future. And if they don't like you, maybe that doesn't make that much difference. When you learn to view the world in a little different way, you can relax and be less anxious. But there are other things that you can do to change your anxieties. Some other practical things that you could list in column 3. You could leave the anxious situation, for example. Go away for a little while. Perhaps you could change it. Maybe you could change yourself in some way. So look at column 3 on your sheet. Think of some practical things that you can do to deal with each one of the anxieties listed in column 1. Please stop the tape and do this now. When you have completed column 3 and listed some practical ways for dealing with your anxieties, you may feel that you just can't do everything at once. So take the practical things that are listed in the third column and number them in their order of priority. Number 1, this is what I'm going to do first. Number 2, that's what I'll do next, and so on. Then decide to start immediately, perhaps as soon as you finish this tape. determine to work on changing your thinking or your behavior in ways that are listed in column 3. In this way, you'll deal with some of the anxieties that you listed in the first column. When anxieties arise in the future, you might want to do this little activity again. That is, in column 1, write down the things that are making you anxious. In column 2, indicate what thinking you're doing in those situations. And in column 3, note some practical ways in which you can deal with the anxiety. If you keep a paper like this with you and work on it in the days that are ahead, you can deliberately try to change much of your thinking and behavior. Taking stock of the situation is the first suggestion that we want to make on this side of the tape. The second suggestion that you might want to consider for dealing with anxieties is that you evaluate your life goals and priorities. Many people are anxious because they have so many things that they are trying to do that they just can't get everything done. One of the reasons why we don't get things done is because we haven't stopped to evaluate our priorities. Now, we can evaluate our goals and priorities on a long range and on a short range basis. Let's look at the long range first. On a separate piece of paper, I would like you to write down an answer to this question. What are the most important things for me to accomplish in life? Please take a few minutes now to answer this question. Turn off the tape and write down the most important things in your life before continuing further. It might have been difficult for you to write down your lifetime goals, but look over the list and decide which are the three most important goals in your life. Perhaps you will want to put a little check mark next to each of them. Then, on the same piece of paper, or on another piece of paper, list these three goals again, and under each, write down some specific things that you can do to accomplish these goals. For example, suppose that one of your goals is to get a college degree. Can you think of some specific steps, some practical things that you can do to move towards this goal? Maybe you can complete your high school background courses. Maybe you can apply to the school, get accepted, take some courses as a freshman, complete the course assignments, and eventually you move on to the point of getting your degree. So now, look over your list of life priorities. Choose the three that are most important, and under each, list some specific things that you can do in order to reach these goals. Now look over all these specific things that you have written down. What do you suppose you could do this week? Are there some things on this list that you could do within the next 7 days? Maybe you want to list that number 1, and then list a number 2 and a number 3, and so on, in order to get you moving towards your goal. There are many people who drift through life, sometimes with a lot of anxiety, and they never accomplish anything because they don't stop to plan ahead. If we stop and plan ahead, decide what we want, and then think about how to get there, we will discover that we can move in very small steps towards the goals that we hope to accomplish in life. Remember that we have a God who is concerned about us, who has a purpose for our lives and can guide us, both in our choice of goals and in the specific steps towards reaching these goals. This kind of long-range and short-range thinking should be done frequently. If you are married, you and your spouse might want to sit down at some time and think about your plans for the future, or think about the goals you have for your work, for your marriage, for your family, for your church, or for other parts of your life. But of course, we can't always be thinking about the future. Some of us just have to get through tomorrow, or even today. How do you do that, especially if today you're experiencing a lot of anxious pressure? The story is told, several years ago, of a very busy industrial executive who called in an expert on time management and asked this question, "How can I get things done? If you could tell me, I'll pay you a lot of money." Well, the expert took a piece of paper out of his pocket and wrote down this advice. At the end of the day, list everything that you still have to do or what you want to do tomorrow. When you have finished your list, decide what is most important, then what is second most important, then what is third most important, and so on. When you come in tomorrow morning, start with number 1 on the list. Stick with it until you finish, and cross it off when you're done. Then go on to number two, and during the day, get down the list as far as you can get. At the end of the day, make up a new list for the next day. This advice was so well heeded that the time expert received a very substantial check for his advice, and the business executive said later, "This is the best guidance that I've ever had in order to help me get things done during the day." Many times we get anxious because we try to do a whole host of things at the same time. We can't accomplish this. Very often this gets us flustered and then more anxious. You can't do a lot of things at the same time. So your best plan is to sit down and plug away doing one thing at a time. But what if you keep getting interrupted? Well, to some extent, we have to try and control these interruptions. That's not always possible, but maybe there are times when you can choose not to answer the phone. Maybe there are times when you have to disappear for a little while to get away from some of the hustle and bustle of life. Maybe we need to tell our friends and sometimes our associates to please don't call us in the morning. I'm not going to answer the phone then. Or if you knock on my door when it's closed or at a certain time of the day, I won't answer because that's the time when I'm going to be working. After a while, your friends will get to respect you. They'll know when you're available, and you in turn will get to feel more relaxed because you get things done. Of course, it's possible that some of your friends won't understand this. They might not like it when you don't respond every time they demand your attention. But you've got to recognize that although each of us wants to be sensitive to the needs of people around us, you are a people too, and it's important for you to get things done, perhaps the very things that God wants you to accomplish. Now, I'm not suggesting that you push people away, that you ignore them, because then you might have everything completed. You might not have the problem of anxiety anymore, but you might have the problem of loneliness. The more you get things done effectively, however, and efficiently, the less anxious you feel, and the more you're able to relate to other people in a relaxed, giving way. So if you're going to deal with your anxieties, it's important, as a second suggestion, to evaluate your goals and priorities, both your long-range priorities and your priorities from day to day. Now let me turn to the third suggestion for dealing with anxiety. It can help to learn some relaxation exercises. It has been discovered that anxiety and muscle tension often go together. If we can learn to relax our muscles so that we feel physically relaxed, then we are able to think more clearly about the problems that we are encountering in our lives, and we can deal with them more realistically. I would like to suggest some ways in which you can relax and unwind your tightened muscles. These are some things that you can do while sitting in front of other people or even sitting in your desk at work. You can do them right now. You can, for example, wiggle your toes for a minute or two. You can circle your feet by rotating your ankles. You can tighten your buttocks on the chair. Count to five, then relax. Sometimes you can stretch out your fingers as far apart as possible, wiggle them a little bit, and then relax. Let your hands go limp and dangle them loosely from your wrists, perhaps over the edge of the chair. Look up to the ceiling or sky. Raise both of your shoulders as you do so. Remember, you are trying to stretch the muscles and relax them. Several years ago, I discovered that I was having difficulty with my voice. That's not a good thing for a speaker. So I went to see a doctor. He looked into my mouth and said, "You, sir, should go and see a speech therapist." I resisted the idea, but I went anyhow. And the man that I talked to was an expert on breathing and speaking, and he told me that I should do some of the very things that I have just mentioned. "When you're getting ready to speak," he said, "wiggle your toes. Stretch out your fingers behind your back so nobody can see you. Look up into the ceiling in an inconspicuous time. All of this can stretch your muscles and help you to relax. When you relax, your voice doesn't cry, 'Ouch!'" I found this to be very helpful. I also discovered that breathing can do much to stop tension. You can inhale deeply into your abdomen. For example, inhale very deeply, count to five or six, and then exhale slowly, kind of like this. It helps if you can breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. Each time, breathe in as deeply as you can. Sometimes you can do this for 5 minutes or so, breathing in and breathing out. It has a remarkably relaxing effect. You may want to turn off the tape now and try it for a while. Some have suggested that a good way to relax your muscles and to breathe more easily is to lay on the floor or to sit on a chair and lean back. Loosen any belts or tight clothing. Take off your glasses and kick off your shoes, if you wish. Now, if you have any medical problems, such as a back problem or something wrong with your joints or muscles, I would be careful about doing what I'm suggesting. I would check first with your physician before you tense any of your muscles. But there is evidence to suggest that if you can learn to tense your muscles and then relax them, it helps your body to lose much of its tension, and it helps you to relax. Let's start to relax our muscles from the feet up. I'll tell you slowly what to do. You may want to play the tape back and do it several times again. If you're laying down, lie on your back with your arms at your side. Now, tense and relax each group of muscles 2 or 3 times. Then as you relax, go on to the next group. Start, for example, with your toes. Curl them towards the floor. Hold it tight. Then relax. Do it again. Curl your toes. Hold it. Relax. Now point your toes upwards, towards your face, as far as possible. Hold them and relax. Now you can work up your body like this. Tense your calves, then your legs. Then relax. Lift your legs until your feet are about a foot from the floor. Hold it and relax. Tense your thighs. Then let your legs fall back. You can do this, of course, in a chair. Lift your legs. Hold your legs tense and relax them. Tense your buttocks. Relax them. Do it again. Now take a deep breath. Hold it and exhale. Push your head forward. Touch your chest. Keep it there. Now lay your head back. Close your eyes, real tight. Then open them again. Tighten your lips. Screw up your face and wiggle your forehead. Then relax. Now clench your fists tightly. Hold them tight. Now loosen your grip and relax. Now spread out your fingers as widely as you can. Wiggle them a little bit. Hold it. Relax. Now the muscles in your arms. Tighten them. Your biceps, like you were a muscle man. Relax. Now shrug your shoulders as if you were trying to touch your ears. Hold it. And relax. Now all of this may seem strange to you. And if you get into the habit of doing this, you can start from your toes and work up your body. Go through each muscle group 3 or 4 times. Hold the muscles tight for 4 or 5 seconds before you relax them. It may take you half an hour or so to go through all of the muscle groups in your body. But if you could get into the practice of doing this a couple of times every day for the next 2 or 3 weeks, you could get to the point where before long you could relax your body very quickly. In fact, you could get to the point where you could relax your body at will, without having to tense your muscles first. Many, many people have learned to do this. Later, when anxious situations come along, these people begin by relaxing their muscles. When their muscles are relaxed, the people are less uptight, and they can deal with their anxieties more realistically. You may want to practice this. After you've been tensing and relaxing your muscles for a few days, think about some of the things that you've put on your list of anxious situations. What makes you anxious? While you think about that list and column 1, tighten and relax your muscles. You will get to the stage where you can learn to completely relax your muscles whenever the pressures come along. It isn't the whole answer. Of course, it doesn't solve the problem that is creating the anxiety. But if your muscles are relaxed, then you can think more clearly because you are physically more relaxed. So we have suggested three ways of dealing with your anxieties on this tape. Take stock of your situation, evaluate your long-range and short-term goals and priorities, and learn to relax your muscles. But a question that still remains is this: what if you can't relax? Let me remind you that in all of this, we need to seek the continual guidance of the Lord whom we serve. I believe that He lets difficulties and problems come into our lives, but He doesn't want us to be perpetually uptight. So I think we should make our anxieties a real matter of prayer. Ask your colleagues around to pray with you, and if you discover that you still can't relax, there may be real value in discussing this in depth with a counselor. Try to find a counselor who understands something about tension, about stress, and who understands something about the peace that comes to those who are followers of Jesus Christ. When we commit ourselves to Him and ask Him to control our lives, He brings us a real peace. There still may be anxiety because of the pressures of life, but often our Lord works through other believers, trained in counseling skills, to help us to deal with the problems of life. Now that you are finished with this tape, perhaps you will want to go back and listen to parts of it again. Sometimes when you hear a tape for the second time, you notice things that you didn't hear the first time through. Hopefully, as you do so, you can learn to relax and to deal more effectively with the stresses of life. This ends side two of the tape. Please don't forget to return the tape to your counselor and to take along any notes that you may have taken and growth activities that you have completed while listening to the tape. You may want to take along that chart that you completed. The examples on this tape are either fictitious or used with the permission of the people involved. Any resemblance to people that you might know is purely a coincidence.